Welcome to Conversations with Ask Ash. Conversations with Ask Ash focuses on people, processes, and outcomes. Ashley dives into everyday conversations around work efficiency, team productivity, and project execution. Let's get into the show. And now, your host, Ashley Schuler.
What's happening, everyone? This is Ashley Schuler, host of Conversations with Ask Ash, and are you ready for this episode? This is a conversation with me and Krista Miller. We met virtually through Jordan Gill's Done in a Day program. And so we were in this coaching program, crafting and creating VIP days. Since then, Chris and I have kept in touch. I have, you know, followed her on social media, and we just started to learn even more about each other through the CEO Bible study group. And I really have admired Chris's journey. And so she was a perfect ask and a perfect fit into this Build From Scratch series. So what you're going to hear is you're going to hear Chris's journey of what she did in terms of building from scratch, from her life to her business and everything in between. My friends, you are going to really enjoy this episode of Krista Miller's Built From Scratch episode. I hope you guys enjoy it. Definitely rate, review, and tell me what was your favorite part of the interview. All right, enjoy the episode. All right. Welcome everyone to another episode of Conversations with Ask Ash with your host, Ashley Schuler. And we are back for a fantastic episode. If you have been listening to the first episode, which was all about how to build from scratch. In fact, it was an explainer episode. I called it at first a trailer episode, but I feel in the podcast world, trailers are like 2 minutes and it was really 37. So it's not really a trailer episode. It is a full explainer episode, a season preview of what to expect from Build From Scratch. And so just in case you need a quick preview, what we're really talking about is we're taking this concept of building from scratch, and we're taking it from the extension of what it means to build projects, programs, initiatives, and really take an idea and what is behind that idea and how do you build it. And so when we are talking with fantastic guests, like I have one today, I'll introduce her in a minute. We are really looking at things, not just from a tactical perspective of, oh, I hired somebody, or, oh, I need this tool to, you know, get my project up and running. We're really talking about the strategy. We're talking about the leadership component. We're talking about execution. But we're also bringing the human component behind building from scratch. And if you know anything about being in the kitchen, many of us do, we know that when our parents or our relatives would be in the kitchen, especially when you were little, we would walk in and they would be making things from scratch. That's what they would say. They'd say, okay, I made this pie from scratch. Maybe it was biscuits. Maybe it was apple pie. And we would look to say, wow, how could you actually make this particular pie? Like from what? And that's what the definition of to do something from scratch is: to create something and make it without any ingredients or materials prepared ahead of time. So yeah, so when I was little and I would go in and see my grandmother cooking, and all of a sudden I would see her with the flour. And then all of a sudden, 30 minutes later, there's biscuits. 30 minutes later, there is pancakes. I'm like, where did it come from? Right. And so the concept of building from scratch, how do we, if you're a project leader assisting a CEO, or even a CEO yourself, you know, how are you actually building from scratch? And so I have a great friend here today, Krista. Say hello, Krista.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for having me, Ashley.
This is going to be fantastic. Krista Miller of Summit in a Box. We're going to have a really great conversation from her perspective on building from scratch, through her lens, through her life, through business, and where she's seeing things. So I would just get, you know, a notebook out if you are around, or if you're driving to Trader Joe's or your local grocery store, that's good too, because it's a good drive for you to just sit and listen. But Krista, one thing I wanted to ask you about, I always ask everyone this question, because in a world that is, we introduce by what we do, and that can get very murky when we start evolving and kind of discovering ourselves, we start to think, well, outside of this, like, who am I really? Who am I really? And I'm just finding that in today's day and age, when we talk about the work that we're doing, lots of people are really starting to put the titles 3 and 4 rows down. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to know from you, even in this season, like, who are you in this season?
Oh, man, that is such, I love this. When is the last time I introduced myself as something other than whatever from Summit in a Box? Oh, my gosh. No, I love this. So I am a mom of 2 little girls. I'm a wife. I live in Wisconsin. I'm super involved in our local church here. I serve in the kids ministry there, teaching 2 to 4-year-olds, and I do all of our curriculum, printing, and stuff like that. So I'm always over there. What else am I? Super introverted, highly sensitive person. If anyone is familiar with the HSP lifestyle, I'm all about that. And yeah, overall, pretty chill, encouraging, happy, tight person who just happened to fall into a business ownership role.
But that's the beauty of all of these things that you named, because they're all of you at some point. Like, it's almost like a journey map. Yeah. You know, and so even as someone, you said you're encouraging, you know, you're you got the HSP. So even going back, like, for someone that is introverted, and people would say typically entrepreneurship, it would be an outward facing, in mm-hmm. some instances, an outward facing type of, you know, industry. For you, though, when did you start to toy around with, like, you know, where, what you wanted to do? And did you always see yourself in at Summit in a Box? Like, did you always see yourself?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Not at all. So in, like, back in the good old days, high school, college, if you would have told me I was going to be a business owner, I would have thought you were absolutely nuts, because I didn't want to, like, be out there. I didn't want a leadership role. I didn't want to have to lead people and talk to people and look and sound like I knew what I was doing. I wanted to be behind the scenes doing something nerdy with, like, no one talking to me, you know? And I ended up pursuing a degree in software engineering, computer science, getting into that role in a big company. And, you know, found that there was a lot more peopling involved than I thought. And it ended up being, for me, a really toxic environment, being in the corporate setting. I was the youngest, and I was the only female on a team of 19 people. Mm-hmm. I straight up didn't fit in. And it was not good for me in my anxiety levels. And honestly, that's what pushed me to business, because I was like, mm-hmm. I could get a new job, but what if it's the same thing? Like, how am mm-hmm. I ever going to find a job in the tech world that's different than this? Mm-hmm. And I didn't see that as a possibility. And so I was like, well, I see other people doing this online business thing. If they can do it, why can't I? And that's what I started doing. And I did run into the introverted issue when I first started. But for me, once I got over that initial fear of posting, it was so much easier for me to post something on social media than go and say something in a meeting at work, you know? So the online business thing worked for me once I started, you know, getting my feet wet with it.
Wow. That's interesting. You know, and it always seems as if there is, you know, similar to, like, I guess, a character in a movie or a plot line. You're going, you know, you're at this job, things are going all right so far, but then plot twist, the mm-hmm. one meeting, the one email, and then you're just kind of like, where am I really? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, where am I really? And so when you thought to yourself, seeing people online, and when was that? Because, I mean, online business, it's been around. It's just sort of been, like, you know, like a quiet, like, secret book club meeting. It's been out there, but like, when were you starting? When did you peek back and find the curtain?
That was 2015.
Okay, 2015. Okay. Yeah. Okay, 2015. And so you said, well, if they can do it, I can. But you, but something key you said, which was, you still like being in tech. So you were like, well, how do I fit in this space? What did you come up with?
Yeah, like, and just like through spending way too much time on Pinterest, you know, I'd run across people with blogs and people doing food blogging and craft blogging. I was like, I can do some of this. And, you know, on the bottom of all their websites, designed by so-and-so, developed by so-and-so. And I did website development. Wow. So then, you know, I click over to their websites and be like, oh, look at these design and development businesses they're running, you know, making a couple $100 a pop. You know, people back then did not charge nearly enough for all of the work that goes into design and development. I was like, I think I can figure that out. So like, that's kind of how I uncovered the world that's online business. I had no clue what actually went into it, but that's where the initial thought came from that maybe I could make it happen too.
I like that because you started A, with your skill set. You started with what you knew. You started with, I can do it too. And then so in the first day of, and I would say, I don't know, we would put it like in a certain day, but that time period where you're actually taking action to say, all right, I'm going to go for it. What did you gather and do? Did you call up people you knew? Did you how did you do all that to say like, all right, I'm out of here?
Oh my gosh, this is so crazy to think back to. I did not tell anyone what I was doing. It was like my worst nightmare that someone I knew would find what I was doing. Like even my husband, I was like, don't look at this. So I opened a Twitter account and I started doing what you were supposed to do back then, posting 10 or 15 times a day. 8 were other people's content, 2 were mine, tagging people, tweeting back and forth. And like, that's where it all started.
Wow.
I haven't looked at Twitter in years at this point, but that's where it started.
That's cool because I mean, that is the space. And I probably started paying attention more to Twitter around 2020, but I started noticing that is where, especially for the tech, that's where a lot of people are chatting.
Yeah.
They're there all the time, you know, and about the products, having conversations, everything. So that's where it all started. So did you land the first client?
Yeah. So I like made some good connections and a couple people that I had, you know, tagged back and forth, whatever. And I decided to start like a little quote unquote mastermind. We all wanted to like launch our first course. So we made a little Slack group around that. And one of them did design and development and had someone come to her. She wasn't interested in the project and she passed it along to me. And that was where the first client came from. The second one also came from someone else in that group. So like the first clients came from the people, the very few people I knew. And then those people that I worked with, you know, continued spreading the word. And that's how it all started.
That's how the wildfire.
Yes. I was not prepared. I was not ready.
But I think, so this is the interesting part about the website development world. And I actually really do love the people who really know how to build the websites because I was not low key. I was actually employed for a little bit at a agency. So I got to see agency work at hand from a strategist perspective. So some of the things that I picked up were walking around the desks and it was like open. So it was like my first kind of private sector thing. And I ran into the UX people. I would run into the designers. I'm like, what was user experience? What's the thing, wireframes. That was like, when I saw them put together a wire, I thought that was brilliant. I was like, this is how you start to build. So this is a really interesting question. So as you probably know, scope creep can really just take yourself out. And when we mean take yourself out, we just mean like, you know, just temporarily break out in like sweats. And so the question is, how did you know anything about the scope, how to scope out projects? But how did you learn quickly that whole process?
Yeah, I think the fact that I had a master's degree in software engineering probably helped because we talk a lot about that in school. So I knew it was a thing. I had done, I had worked on a team doing software and website development, and that came up all the time. The business side was always trying to push more requirements on the projects they gave us. So I knew it was a thing. Uh-huh. That does not mean I handled it well to begin with, because especially with those first handful of clients, I just wanted to make them happy. Mm-hmm. They asked for something else. Yes, ma'am. I will do that for you. I remember the first time I put my foot down with a client, and she was trying to add, she wanted to add a slider on her website, which these days I'm sure would be easy. Back in 2015, at least for me, it was not easy. And I wrote this big, long email I spent so much time on this. It wasn't in our original requirements. Here's how much I'm going to have to charge extra. I'm so sorry. She's like, oh, no problem. Go ahead. Just add that on. And I think every project after that, I started getting better and better. And honestly, it was the bad experiences that would make the biggest difference. I was like, never again is that going to happen. So I'd update my contract, update my onboarding. And it was really just a series of hard lessons of basically how to handle other people and handle my own fear of disappointing them, because I just wanted everyone to be happy. So it was like I had the knowledge of scope creep, but it was way different teaching myself how to actually handle and manage it.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, in real time is different from seeing it from afar, or you're adjacent, because you could be the one that, no, you can't have any scope group. You could just be like, what do you mean? Right. But to be in the crossfire of it is a whole different story.
Yes.
So I'm also curious too, because for the clients that you started to take on, was it everybody? Or did you have to scope it down?
I started out, if you have a website and you want something done on it, give me a call. That was it. That was how I started. So I was doing anything and everything. I think within the first few months, I had someone who wanted me to update a little section on her homepage, all the way to someone who wanted me to develop 6 custom WordPress themes for her. I didn't know what I was doing, but I did them all. I took them all, and I figured out really fast what I did and didn't want to do, and kind of crafted my business and offers from there. But I started out, if you have a project, I will give it a shot.
Yeah. And then again, that spread like wildfire. To you doing great work. But when did it come to a time where, you had to start making some decisions in the business about the direction, or before niche was a niche, right? Before niche was a niche, when did you start to make those decisions? Yeah. When did you start doing that?
Yeah. I think I made those decisions as they came up. So as I got those first few projects, I started seeing what I liked and then what I didn't like, what I was good at and what I wasn't good at. I really quickly realized I was not good at design. I had started by offering design stuff. So I was like, someone has to design it if they want work done. So I can do that. I figured out I cannot do that. Luckily I had some great friends who helped me out in a couple pinches, but I was like, okay, I can no longer offer design. So then I niched down to just development. So that was one thing. I was doing development for anyone come to me for a development project. And then I had that project I mentioned where a designer wanted me to develop 6 themes for her. That was the first time I had worked with a designer versus just like a business owner who wanted work on their website. And that was the game changer for me. I was like, these are the projects I want, bigger projects with people who can make something pretty. It's not just me going in, having to do all of this, onboarding and setup and client management for like a little tweak on a website. It's going to be bigger projects with these designers. And that's what direction I moved in. So then I shifted to marketing just to designers, offering, I offered a couple packages, but my main one is like custom theme development for their clients. And that was my sweet spot for a long time.
That is neat because, and I say this about when you start off with an idea, that you have to vet and test it to see how viable or feasible, or how is it going to hold up. And it sounds like, this aspect from your perspective, you just went in and were like, all right, I'm just going to ride this horse until I get to a terrain that A, I like, or that B is like, you know, is smooth for me, so to speak, right? Smooth in certain terms of like that you're finding your groove. So this is good. This is good, Krista. Let's talk about the some of in your early days and even kind of now, and we'll kind of get into you know, what you're doing now, but emotions. Now, you were, you know, how did you, with every project, were you always one that's like, I'm super confident in the work, but then once it's out of the project, you're like, now what's going on? Now what, like how did you have were you a different person? Like, could you, basically what I'm saying is, do you lock in when it's work and then business owner, when you have to do other things, is it a different hat that you wear?
That is a great question. So I would say until very recently, I did not have the level of like confidence in myself and my work that I should have. I am I'm very much a perfectionist, and I always assume that what I'm doing, or always used to assume that what I was doing was not good enough for whoever it was. It's like, here's what I have. I spent twice as long as on this as I should have. And I was just waiting for them to email me back to just say they hated everything, even though I knew it was literally pixel perfect, you know? So I had so much anxiety around checking emails and getting feedback and talking to people afterwards. There was always that. One of the first things I outsourced was my inbox because of the level of anxiety I had when I even thought about it. And no one ever said anything bad, but I was waiting for it. I knew it was coming. So I did not have the level of confidence that that I really needed to be like a healthy business owner until recently. It took a really great coach to help me get that.
Wow. And I think that's normal in a lot of ways, just in terms of navigating, because it's really like, you don't know what you don't know until you're faced with it. And so, you know, you did the next natural thing, which was like, all right, get somebody else to do it. And then having them to knock on my door to say, all right, you need to answer this email. I mean, I think that makes perfect sense. I do want to get into a question about, you know, something that we both share, which is in our faith, right? And what I'm interested in when it comes to how an idea is born and how it landed to you. Did you also feel that God was calling you into entrepreneurship?
Ooh, I did not. You know, back at that time when I started that business, I didn't have enough of a relationship with God. I'm not even sure if I could have considered myself. I don't think I was going to church at that time. And if I was, I wasn't to the point yet where I was listening or I could hear or I knew that I was supposed to follow that path. I can look back now and see that he guided every single step because I didn't do that.
Yeah.
I didn't know enough to like feel that guidance.
Yeah. And I think that's the powerful thing, that there could be a nudge, but you know, I can think back at times where I know that I'm either making a decision or I'm wondering how I actually got there. And he's right there pushing and opening the doors and putting people in the right places for that. So as you started even building upon, you know, just your life and discovering new ways in your business, virtual summits became all the rage. And I think, quiet as it was kept, I don't know how quiet, but the virtual world was already there. Like they were already doing things, but I know I just didn't get exposed until COVID. I didn't get exposed until COVID. I heard like, oh, you can do something virtual. I'm like, okay, cool. I heard about, you know, courses that you could do and things like that. But this aspect of virtual summits and people being able to be connected with events was new. So Summit in a Box, how did we get there?
Yeah. So I had gotten to the point in my development business where like things were going fairly well. Like I was making probably, it was like $3,000-$4,000 a month. So nothing wild, but that's what I needed. That was like twice the goal that I had when I left my job. Cause I was just like, I need the bare minimum so I can live and I need to get out of this job. So at the point I was making $3,000-$4,000, getting clients kind of as I needed them, but I felt really stalled. And I was like, I see these other people growing their business is much bigger than this, much more well-connected in the industry. Mm-hmm. And I want that. And I had no idea how to get it except for hosting a summit. But this was back in 2017. And the only people doing summits were like the biggest names, biggest influencers out there. Mm-hmm. There weren't little people like Krista doing virtual summits. It was the big tech companies and the biggest names in online business doing it. And I was like, I can't do that. So I sat on the idea quite a bit, but it just kept coming to mind, like, this is the next thing you have to do. Now I would have listened to that much earlier. I just didn't know back then. But I was driving one day and this idea just dropped into my mind. And I remember exactly where I was driving. And it was like, you are going to host a summit for your audience of designers and you're going to do it your way. Back then, summits weren't niched. There weren't summits for designers, for these little subsets of business owners and people. It was like summits for all online business owners to grow their business. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. So mine is the first one I know of that was for a really specific niche. And that was why it worked for me. So I hosted the summit to grow my development business. I was hoping to get a few clients, make a couple of $1,000s maybe. I was scared to even say that out loud. Hosted this first summit and just blew my goals out of the water. My email list went from 500 people, which I'd worked 3 years to build, 500 people to 1500 people. And I was making $3,000-$4,000 a month. I brought in 16K through this one thing. Wow. I had never seen that much money in one place before. I was like, what is this life? And I was like, right. Buckle up, we're doing it again. So I jumped right into planning the next one. But in the meantime, people kept asking, how did you do that? Can you teach me how to do that? Can you help me do that? Mm-hmm. I was like, no, go away. That was so much work. I don't have time to help you figure it out. But they wore me down, as you can see. And there was this one day, it was like 3 months, I think, after my summit happened, where my coach messaged me on Voxer, one of my speakers messaged me on Facebook, and an attendee sent me an email, all three of them saying in different ways, please teach people how to host summits. Please teach me how to host a summit. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm doing this now. You know, like it felt like more than just a coincidence. It felt like I'm supposed to be doing this. Mm-hmm. So I did. I took my little Asana, not little, I took my 300 task Asana project that I had used to plan my own summit. I made it all pretty, added descriptions. And I was like, if you guys want to pay $200 for this, we'll see what happens. And they did. I had never made a digital product up to that point that like actually sold. And this thing was just selling. I didn't have a wonderful sales page. It was priced higher than I thought people would pay. And they kept buying it. And I was like, oh, I guess there's something here. So that's how it all started.
Wow. I think that's pretty incredible. The one idea, because again, you're doing it for yourself. You're like, okay, I can do this. You do it. And then going back to, again, the intricacies of how just when you think it's just one thing, it's just bigger. And how God's able to weave that in. You're just like, let's do it again. And it's for me. Not that it's a bad thing, but you were just like, we're just doing it to get more clients and as a strategy. But then it was three people that we kept knocking. And it was like, girl, you've got to teach us. You got to teach us. And I just love that. Number one, it was just a girl after my own heart, 300 tasks in Asana. I would love to see it because that sounds exciting. That sounds exciting. What's happening, everyone? I hope that you are enjoying the Built From Scratch season. I love that we're unpacking this topic. What does it mean to build a program, project, an initiative, and sometimes your life from scratch? And did you know that there are three reasons typically why projects fail. Number one, poor planning. Number two, unclear goals. And number three, miscommunication. So what do we do about this? We build better workflows. Yes, we build better workflows. And in fact, I have a service that will just address this, the ClickUp and Project Management VIP Day. I'm excited about this because I get to partner with you for one day to set up workflows that are going to help you plan better projects, execute efficiently, and be able to do away with miscommunication with your team members. Oh yes, you're going to have a peace of mind. Sounds like a dream? Well, it can be your dream. So be sure to apply for the ClickUp and Project Management VIP Day. All the information is in the show notes. Back to the episode. But so you summit in a box, and that is how I saw your name, as Summit in a Box. Well, first, you know, it's so interesting when you hear people's like names, you're not always thinking of a person. So then when I saw you, I was like, oh, it's a person, you know. So it's like Summit in a Box. This is Kristen Miller. So this is happening, you're teaching, but when did you get it in a box? So what was in the box piece? Was it the program, the membership, all of that? Like you, because you had to go from digital product to what else?
That's a great question. So like when I initially had the thought, Summit in a Box, and that's what I decided to name the business, I never thought of a physical aspect, although you can see them behind me right now. Mm-hmm. I thought, I'm good at making templates. I'm good at making processes. Mm-hmm. And like, as I hosted that first summit, I saved everything. I wrote step-by-step processes. That's just how my brain works. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, if I'm going to do this thing, I'm going to give them everything. It is so silly for someone to host something as big as a summit and make everything from scratch when it has already been done. Like literally 400 or 500 hours of work that thing took me. And I was like, no one should have to do that. So I had the vision, like, if I'm going to do this thing, I'm going to give them everything. And Summit in a Box is just the name that came to mind. Basically everything you need for a virtual summit. But it started out with just that project plan as like my minimum viable product type situation. Are they going to buy this? And when they did, I was like, okay, like it looks like it's going to be worth me making this whole Summit in a Box vision.
Right.
I sat down to start it and I couldn't, because I started thinking about everything that's going to go into this. How many trainings, how many templates, thousands of resources. Where do I even start? I can't pre-sell it because it's too big of a thing. I'll be like, okay, thanks for the money. See you in 2 years when it's done. Okay, couldn't do that. I couldn't make it all ahead of time. I can't spend years making this and not get money till I'm done. So the solution I came up with was a membership. So I started at $12 a month with three resources. I had a speaker pitch template, a summit planning workbook, and was it like a registration page copy or something like that? Ooh, $12 cool. a month. Mm. Every month, the price for new members increased, and I added three more resources. And that's how I started building Summit in a Box. It was basically a way for me to be motivated to keep making things. These are people paying and waiting for things. It was a way for me to make money for the work I was doing. And it was a way for them to prove to me at every single step that they were going to keep paying for it. Every month I raised the price. Is anyone new going to join? Okay, yes. All right, let's see what's going to happen next. And like, that is how I built it out. And it took me, it was about 18 months of building and doing price increases. I eventually got to 97 a month was kind of where I capped it. And people were still joining. I think I was making like $2,500 a month from people who had joined from $12 a month to the 97. And at that point I was like, this is going to take forever if I'm only adding three resources a month, even then. So I kept it there. And I put everything I had into making these new resources. I really cut back on client work for my development business and just went to town making everything I could possibly manage. And in the timing was wonderful. March 2020, aka COVID, I launched the full Summit in a Box program finally. Wow. So I built it from a membership and then it became Summit in a Box. And then through a great connection through a friend introduced me to someone who actually makes boxes. And he was like, hello, your company is called Summit in a Box. Why don't you have one? I was like, oh, exactly. Good question. So now we have physical boxes with all kinds of resources that our students and clients get. So that's a fun little addition there.
You know, what is powerful about what you said is that you took your time, number mm-hmm. one, getting an understanding of, all right, how do I scale this? How do I do it in a manageable way? Because this isn't like, whatever, if you want to call it, like the Cheez-It factory, where you just, this is just what you're going to be doing, like baking Cheez-Its all night and like the summit, it, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? And just churning stuff out. It also had to be, I think, probably measurable for you, you know, members coming in, mm-hmm. And then them utilizing the resources, even in those early phases, were people testing and implementing and giving you feedback?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. They were definitely putting things into action. Mm-hmm. And I was always asking for feedback. What do you want me to make next? What issues are you finding with the things we already have? And that's how I built it. That's how I decided what I was going to make next. What were people asking for? And that's what I made and added. And I like some of the summits that everyone would know and recognize out there today came from like people using that membership. I don't want to say came from it because they were doing a lot themselves back mm-hmm. when I, you know, just had a handful of resources. But they were putting them into action from the very beginning, which was really cool to see.
It was booster. It boosted.
Absolutely.
That's neat. And I think a couple of things to tease out for this aspect of building from scratch. See, Krista had, she had what she had in her own stuff, mm-hmm. but she had to take what she, the templates, the copy, but she had to make it in such a way where people could replicate and produce. Mm-hmm. And so when you are in the beginning throes, I want to talk from the lens, even from the creators out there and the visionaries out there, is it's super important to understand that, A, the idea is just like flour, right? That's point one. Mm-hmm. And that also is enough. Like, you had enough. Your template for your copy was your flour. You know, and so you took that and you ran from it. I think from, and at the time, let me, at the time, Kristen, did you have people around you? Was it yourself and your five fingers or your 10 fingers? What were, who all was there? Was it like hand and left hand and right hand and you? Yeah. Like, who was with you, membership, and then March 2020?
Yeah. So, in the later years of my development business and when I started, you know, just with the initial template and the membership, I had a VA who was probably doing 20-ish hours a month, something mm-hmm. like that. And then by the end of the membership, we were up to probably 10 hours a week. And then I launched Summit in a Box, hired my first part-time employee, who then within a month became my first full-time employee. So after that, things happened pretty quickly.
Wow.
I had help in the places I needed it. And as I needed more help, they just kept growing along with me, or I kept changing people as I needed to. So I was not doing things by myself for a very long time. I got really, I pretty quickly like saw the places where it's like, it is a waste of time for mm-hmm. me to be scheduling these posts, to be doing these things. And, you know, my profit margin isn't going to be as high, but I can grow so much more quickly when I bring on this help. So I've always been really quick to add team members where I need them.
This is good to know, because I think from those that are either in the role of partnering with visionaries and the CEOs, you know, did you look specifically for, all right, skill set and what I could do for like the thing that needs to be done? Mm-hmm. But did you also need someone that could also, what do you want to call, like almost not replicate your brain, but also be able to like to think as a complement to what you're doing as well? Did any of that cross your mind as you are, when you're bringing on folks, whether it's contractors or, you know, or whoever you're, you know, working with?
Yeah, there's definitely been some of each. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, my first lots of hires, it was, I need this specific task or these specific tasks done. who can show me that you can do those things for less? So like my first hire, I needed her to edit my blog posts and schedule my Twitter posts and stuff like that, right? So mm-hmm. I was looking for a VA who said they did those things.
Yeah.
Then a design assistant was my next one. So I was looking for someone who was good at designing worksheets and my, redo my brand and things like that. My first employee was the first one where I wasn't looking as much at, show me you know how to do these specific things and use these specific programs. It was more who has I don't even know how to explain it. It wasn't as skill-based. It was more personality-based. I wanted someone who was good at admin work and cared about people and things like that. But I didn't care if they had used, Asana before or anything like that. So my first employee, she's still with me today. I pulled her from a teaching job. She was a teacher, cool. Teacher's assistant, and I trained her from the ground up and all business and everything. And that was amazing because she didn't come in with her own agenda and systems and things like that. And now she can make them. She's wonderful. But that was a really cool experience. My next employee that I brought on was someone who complimented me and was an equal and above me, even with the marketing brain. Mm-hmm. She had ran her own business for lots of years and just kind of got burned out on the running the business side of thing and all the pressure. She was so good at marketing and copy, which are things I'm okay at, but someone else's perspective is so powerful. So I brought her on and we put our brains together for all kinds of different ways to market. How should we change our messaging and positioning and all these things we're doing? And that elevated us a lot. Having someone else's outside brain who was also very dedicated. It wasn't just a contractor trying to do the job to finish the contract. She was an employee. She was here with me in it. Still is. So that was a really cool hire. And, since then I've had a couple others who are more kind of skill set based. Mm-hmm. Both of them are just wonderful. They're wonderful when you need them.
That's really good to hear. And I love how you did the breakdown because I think there's a couple of things that I know for me that I'm noticing, I think, in the industry of we need operators, we need people to do the work. And so you said this very beautifully, skill set based. Again, someone that is that individual contributor that can do the work, so needed. You didn't negate. It's not an either or. It is. I also needed someone that can also have some leadership. Mm-hmm. They understand some strategy and this aspect of executing on what's needed to be done. And so I think for those that are out there that are the operators that are also looking at, whether it's roles that you want to fulfill, and maybe you are a PM, I just challenge you to think through how can you, especially, for those that are the CEOs and the visionaries, in that mindset of how can you become a thought partner in that way? Mm-hmm. Because we are, I believe what I'm seeing is that the work is elevating in such a way where it's not necessarily we're in the Cheez-It factory. Let's just go and just get all the Cheez-Its. There's an aspect where the work has deeper scope. Yeah. There's different levels of complexity. And what's interesting, and I would love to know even for business pivots and things, that some people are burning down and they're building back up. And so that takes a different mindset of not just I need a toolkit. We all have a good toolkit, actually, but it's a different mindset behind now we're building something new. So for you, Krista, where is it that you're finding someone in a box now? Where are you finding yourself when it comes to this aspect of where you are in business?
Yeah. I feel like I've been lucky / blessed with my Summit in a Box journey where there's never been a point where it's I got to burn it all down. And I'm seeing so many people do that. I would say the biggest place that that's come up for me is the way I am looking at my offers and myself and the position I hold in this industry. For lots of years, I was not owning it. I was not confident. I was not going to go out on social media or get on a call with someone and be like, I can help you do this. And like, I can do it better than anyone else. And now I will. I will sit here and like tell someone, you're not going to find someone who can help you better than I can. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest thing that I've mm-hmm. burned down and rebuilt. And it has been so good for our company and for the people we work with, for mm-hmm. me to take that ownership and step into that level of confidence. I can serve them so much better when I've always been like confident in what I'm doing. I just wasn't able to like own it. It's very mm-hmm. hard to explain.
Yeah.
But that's like the biggest thing for me that I've run into. I hope that makes sense.
I think that's real. I think that's something that I think it's honest, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's just, yeah, that's just what it is. So I like it. So, you know, as you are, you know, sort of looking at like even your own peers in the industry, because you kind of mentioned the aspect of we are seeing people burning stuff down and rebuilding. What are you, you know, and I think this goes back into like the what do you call like the business, I don't know, we call it the business friend or just really the human side. Mm-hmm. How do you help to like even lend yourself in that way of whether it's being supportive or, you know, helping people to navigate the pivots?
Yeah. I mean, I really just try to be the biggest hype person ever and make sure that they are not like putting a negative connotation on things or too much pressure on themselves, and like just being that hype woman, you know, because mm-hmm. when someone's in that stage of deciding that something is not going well enough that they need to like totally redo their entire business and lives, like they need that. There's a lot of mm-hmm. Self-doubt and emotions and all of that stuff. So really I've just taken the point of hype woman for a lot of people. And, you know, for the people I'm closer with, I'm like, tell me when the thing is ready. And my people will know about it, you know? So like, I feel like those are probably the biggest things we can do is just be the cheerleader and then be the supporter when they're ready for that.
No, I think that's perfect. That's just what we need, you know, just mm-hmm. being able to, support one another. Something else I'm wondering too, because I know for first time listeners, or also those that are thinking through the longevity of like virtual summits in that particular industry, where are you seeing some of these trends? What's new? What's something that has piqued your interest?
Mm-hmm. Something that has piqued my interest with summits lately is the rise of summits outside of the business space, like people doing summits for people who are not business owners, and how well they're working. Mm. And there are still so many industries and niches out there where summits haven't been hosted. And like in my spot where we also have like a coaching program, like a group coaching program for people hosting summits, I'm in the spot where I get to watch people break into these industries a lot. Wow. And see them just catch like wildfire and get results that I can't even dream about, you know, in the B2B space. And that has been really cool. Mm-hmm. I've been leaning into that more and speaking more specifically to those people because the opportunity is huge. Not that it's not there for people who are also, you know, marketing to business owners or anything mm-hmm. like that, but it's harder to stand out in that market because there are just so many summits for business owners. So seeing more summits outside of the business niche. Mm-hmm. And then just like with the online trends, shorter events with shorter sessions are the things that are working and catching people's attention.
You know, when you said that about the shorter, I think when I came onto a few of yours mm-hmm. that you were hosting, that I was ready for a 60-minute something when I logged in. And when I logged in and it was like 25 or 20 mm-hmm. minutes.
Yeah.
I said, now what's going on? I said, what happened? It didn't click.
Yeah.
It didn't. And then, so sometimes you do have to experience to kind of get the concept together. But when I logged in and I'd seen it because I think there's okay. This is also, let me back up because I think there's also this. There was a tension between virtual conference, live event, and then virtual summit. And then there's some people say, well, it's not really a virtual summit if you got live people. And it's like, ooh, wait a minute. what's your take? Is there any flexibilities in that?
It's so confusing. So literally up until last week, I would have said a summit is free, a conference is paid. But then I was talking to someone who has or had an event that was free, but all live. I was like, oh, that seems more like a conference to me. So I don't have a good definition, but okay. I think you change the strategy changes so much. It changes more based on the ticket. So I lean more towards a free paid ticket being the differentiator, but a live, having everything live does give it more of like an elevated conference type feel. You just can't match that engagement. So I don't know if the actual words matter too much, but I'm confused too for anyone else who is.
There was an aspect of, you know, kind of creating your own definition and people putting their spin on things because once I, like I said, when I was following you and then I think you also did a couple of collaborations, I didn't realize that there was a pre-recorded aspect to it too. So, but then there would be either a live component of a Q&A or an interview or something. And I thought that was pretty cool because I just hadn't thought about that. And then I think too, there was also an aspect of people, I think, taking elements of, and I actually am slipping into VIP days, which we can talk a little bit about that, because I found that people were also doing parts of summits, like post summit strategy, sponsorships, you know what I'm saying, onboarding, like, or the marketing aspect of it. You started with the VIP days because we were in Jordan Gill's Done in a Day program. How did the VIP day offer, how did that work for you?
Yeah, so I was walking people through like a five stages of planning their summit. So we'd go over like who the summit was for, what it was about. We started maybe with goals and like their timeline and stuff like that. We'd get their timeline and project plan all set up. We'd map out their like All Access Pass package and pricing and how all that would go. And we talk about their offer and how they were going to launch that. And then we would also brainstorm their speaker strategy, what kinds of speakers were going to get them results. We'd brainstorm the speakers that they were going to get. I think the people who did it loved it, but I didn't love it. I was like, I am doing you such a disservice pretending that I can help you host like this wonderful, profitable event in one day. Because it's just not how it works. So I did stop offering those eventually. Like I did shift to being like, okay, we do the day and you also get the Summit in a Box program because you need that. And then I was like, I'm just not serving people best in the VIP day offer. So I got rid of those and switched to the group coaching program.
Awesome. Okay. So you did, so group coaching. So you had how, and are you still doing group coaching?
Yeah, that's kind of shifted into our primary offer as of April 2022. You know, I was looking at, well, Summit in a Box is just kind of like a self-study course. And I had like a VIP option where we would do like, was it monthly calls? And we had a Facebook group. And it was getting to where it was a lot of people who I was helping a lot, but also I felt like I could help them so much more. You know, they'd launch their summit and get the results. And I was like, oh, if I would have seen your registration page before you launched, I would have told you to change all these things and you would have gotten such better results. And it was driving me nuts. Mm-hmm. And I was also noticing these people who were getting better results than others and who I could help more and people who had these great offers that they could launch through the event. They didn't know how. And I wanted to group all those people together and help them more and have like closer, you know, higher touch situation with them. So that's where the group coaching program came in. And it has been really great for me to be able to have my hands in events more. And it's been really great for them too. Because now we don't have to get to where it's like, oh, dang it. Wish you would have shown me that before everything happened. Right. Maybe next time I can catch it all beforehand. So that has been really great.
Oh, that's cool. I want to ask two more questions before we wrap up. tell me about your favorite build from scratch moments, meaning, you know, what is your kind of favorite, either it's a biggest lesson, something that you're really proud of. Yeah. Something that may come to mind.
Okay. I don't know if this is exactly what you're looking for, but this is what came to mind. My biggest, or like a lesson I've learned about building from scratch, is that I need to rein myself in with building things from scratch because I love it so much. Like, that's where my energy comes from. I want to have the ideas and I want to make the project plan and I want to start it. I want to plan all the things. I love it so much and I get so much energy from it and I have so many ideas that I got to the point last year where my team was just like, they love me and they're so supportive, but they were just burned out. And they're like, we'll keep going, but we could kind of use a break and look at all these things we've created that we could make better and leverage more and improve. And I was like, oh, okay. And in, was it March of this year, I did a challenge for myself and with some encouragement from my coach, I didn't start a single new thing. Wow. I was not allowed to add a new task to my task list. I could like make a list of the things to do later, but I couldn't do anything. Mm-hmm. And what I learned about myself is just how much my energy depends on starting new things. Because by the end of that month, I was like, oh, this is boring and I hate everything, whatever, you know. But I also learned how much power there is in, yes, building the thing, but also then seeing it through and giving it the attention it deserves longer term and revisiting those old things that you built from scratch and bringing them back, making them better, and things like that. So that has been my biggest lesson.
That's good. Reining yourself in, understanding priorities, understanding your time and your energy, and then what really makes sense for the season that you're in. I love it. And I love how your team's like, we can keep doing it.
But we don't want to.
Good. This is fantastic, Krista. I've had such a great time speaking with you. We've just had an awesome conversation. But I do also would love for you to leave some encouragement for those that are looking at this aspect of like, all right, building from scratch. I'm doing it. I'm thinking about it. I'm in the beginning stages of it. Talk to us about what, you know, give her like 1 to 3 tips.
Yeah. Okay. So my first tip would be to go in with that mindset that I had way back in the beginning. And I wish I would have kept it all along, but it was like, if they can do it, why can't I? Give yourself that saying if you need it. If they can do it. If I can do it, why can't you? You can. I would also encourage you to build it your way. So like the way I built Summit in a Box, I had never seen anyone do that. And I haven't seen anyone do it like that since, building a big signature offer through like a membership model. Build it your way. You don't have to do the big pre-launch strategy everyone talks about. You don't have to make it perfect before you launch it. Look at what works with the product you're creating and the way you're motivated and the way you work, and come up with your own rules and just own it, because I did and it was fine. You know, there was no proven strategy around that. It was just what worked for me. Give yourself some confidence. Trust the process and make your own path if you have to.
This is good. I love it. Well, we have come to the end of the podcast episode. We will have all of the information of how you can get in touch with Krista Miller of Summit in a Box, how you can stay connected with her and be able to dive into her content and her products and services. And a great pro tip that she's giving you all, building from scratch takes time, trust the process, and do it your own way. I love it. All right, everyone, until next time, we'll be back. This is season 7 of Conversations with Ask Ash, the Built from Scratch season. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Conversations with Ask Ash. Please be sure to subscribe, leave a 5-star review, and follow Ashley on social media at Ashley_Schuler_. That's ASHLEYSHULER_.